Hello, and welcome to the Reader podcast. My name is Frances, and I work for the Reader. Last summer, podcast editor and producer Chris Lynn and I visited Shakespeare North Playhouse in Prescott in Merseyside. Prescott has long been linked to Shakespeare, as it's close to the residence of the Earls of Derby in Knowsley. The fourth Earl of Derby, Lord Strange, was the patron of a 16th century troupe of strolling players called Lord Strange's Men, who performed some of Shakespeare's early plays in London. Added to this, Prescott is also the only known site outside London of a purpose-built Elizabethan playhouse, constructed in 1595 or 96, and we know Lord Strange's Men certainly performed at that theatre too. The new Shakespeare North Playhouse represents a 15-year journey from the dream of building on this precious heritage to the reality of a busy, welcoming building which houses at its heart a beautiful wooden cockpit-in-court theatre built to an original design by the 17th century architect Inigo Jones. The playhouse opened its doors in 2022 and aims not only to attract the best theatre from around the world, but also to be a community home for the people of Prescott. As we'll hear, it was to help with this part of their ambition that Shakespeare North Playhouse partnered with The Reader to offer shared reading as another way of welcoming local people into the building. We're waiting, having a cup of coffee, and waiting to have a tour of the new Shakespeare Theatre before joining the shared reading group that happens here on Fridays at 3:30. That is a tour led by someone wearing an old-fashioned, what is it called, like a jester's hat, yeah. Of excited children, look like they're going all over the building. I wish we could join them in a way.
Lord Strange is presenting me not there. She doesn't want to...
Did you want a tour of the building? I think Emily mentioned that.
Is that okay? That would be absolutely brilliant. Thank you, Niamh. Yes,
Niamh. Hi, my name's Niamh. I'm the media and comms officer here at Shakespeare North Playhouse.
I'll take you into our performance garden. The whole idea of the performance garden is that it's a space for people honing talent and like smaller productions, more fringe productions and stuff like that.
So you've got all sorts of different things happening out here during the summer months, and also things going on in the cockpit. That's awesome. It's exciting.
Yeah.
So are you getting good audiences?
Yeah. They've got really loyal local audience.
Oh, brilliant.
And stuff,
wow, great. So those are the people who watched it sort of being built in a way, probably, and waiting at the door to come.
Yeah. I think a lot of our ethos as well is like, you know, people turning up and making it their own and just making it accessible, really. So if you don't usually go to the theatre, if you're not like into it, that it's still a space for you.
So we're standing in front of a big wooden door with cockpit theatre above it, and you're about to give us a sneak peek.
Because it still smells of oak,
I think, as well. Doesn't it?
That hasn't gone yet.
It does.
We have candelabras as well, so we had so we can do like traditional performances by candlelight.
Wow.
It's quite moving. It's like it's really atmospheric, and I think because of how it's actually designed, because it's acoustically, it like reverbs the sound and stuff, because it's like amphitheatre style,
almost. Right.
So when it is. It's like a real sensory experience, but lights are down, you've just got the candles on, and you've got a person just speaking Shakespeare in the middle of the stage. It's like, it's incredibly atmospheric.
Blow, winds, and crack your cheeks. Rage, blow. You cataracts and hurricanes, spout till you have drenched our steeples. You sulphurous and thought-executing fires, vaunt couriers of oak-cleaving thunderbolts, singe my white head. And thou, all-shaking thunder, strike flat the thick rotundity of the world. Crack nature's moulds. All germs spill at once that makes ingrateful man.
That was Emily Parr, who we persuaded to read a speech from King Lear on the cockpit stage. Emily is project producer for learning and engagement at Shakespeare North Playhouse, and she runs one of the two shared reading groups there. We're going to listen in to Emily's group now as they read both a longer extract from Act 3, Scene 2 of King Lear, and William Ernest Henley's poem, Invictus. Interspersed with the group's discussion, we're also hear Emily explaining what shared reading means to her and how it's been a part of the Playhouse since it first opened its doors.
So shall we begin with our reading? It's King Lear. So I'll hand these around.
I am Emily Parr, project producer for learning and engagement here at Shakespeare North.
Great.
So that means in terms of our outreach work with schools, I prepare and deliver most of that, but also a lot of the community engagement work we do, because engagement is a huge part, obviously, of my title.
Right.
So that means that I lead on the shared reading sessions, but we lead things like writing sessions, art clubs. There's loads and loads of different events that we offer here at the theatre. It's not just a venue for shows to be on, it's a community hub. And we make sure that from day to day, most days of the week, that there's always something going on, and it's a lively space that no matter what time of day you come in, there's always someone to greet you and for something to do.
Yeah, we noticed that coming straight into the cafe, and then someone who worked here walked by and said hello to one of the regulars, and we were saying it's a little bit like what we're trying to get to at the Reader's Headquarters in Calderstones as well. Somewhere where you can come in and think, oh, there's something for me.
Yeah, like a second home. Yes. A lot of people, even though we've only been open for a year, a lot of people are already saying it feels like a second home, and we're seeing the same faces popping in from day to day, meeting their friends. We have things like Chatty Cafe, which is like a regular thing for faces. And there's such a loyal local community here already.
Mm.
And there's such a strong fan base for the history of Prescott and the heritage we've got here, that we already had a ready-made audience when the building opened who couldn't wait to share it with the world. And
oh, I'm so glad that there's shared reading going on here, because it feels like exactly the sort of place where it fits in. But how did that come about?
So basically, my manager, Yvonne, was put in touch with one of their colleagues at The Reader. And so she met with us and discussed possibilities and how we could make it work with our schedule. So we basically thought there's going to be a big demand for this. So we planned two sessions a week.
Really? Yeah. From the beginning,
you decided
to have two? Fantastic.
Yeah, because it just seemed something so valuable as well. We wanted to test the waters with it and see. And from the beginning, there was real demand. I mean, the numbers were good, and that we've been running it since last September, and it's just gone from strength to strength, really.
So how many people are each group?
So we have to limit capacity to 12, just because if we didn't...
Yeah, it wouldn't be quite the same
thing. Yeah, and I know a lot of places run it like a drop-in, but we're very fortunate to be in a position where we can't run it as a drop-in, because we would have to disappoint people, because more people would come than the 12 in lots of cases.
Yeah.
So we limit it to 12 just to make sure that, as you say, everyone's getting the best experience out of it and has an opportunity to input. And we run it on a Thursday morning and Friday afternoon, just to give people a different chance depending on their work schedules.
Yes, and stuff. Absolutely.
So from the beginning, we've seen lots of new faces, but we've also seen regulars who have been coming since last September.
Wow.
And it's so lovely that one of those regulars is now leading the Thursday session.
Why is he scary?
It's his position, you see, isn't it?
Okay.
And he is a king, isn't he?
So he should have power?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's out in the weathers, isn't he?
Yeah.
And it's annoying him. I don't think he's used to being out without all the rights, shall we say, to you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So he's vulnerable then,
And to think, what am I doing here?
I think he's scary about the language he uses.
Why?
the fires, thunderbolts, singe.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely, I'm with you. Anyone else? It's similar thinking, so we're certainly on this.
He's angry, isn't he? He's really angry.
If we know he's a king who's ended up, as you say, in this situation, there's got to be something.
Yeah.
That is, whether it's destructive. Jane, come back to your idea of destructive. Why did you come up with that word? Is it the weather or...?
Yeah, I mean, he's almost commanding the weather to destroy things.
Why would he want to do that?
Maybe he's just thought that the loss of his daughter basically was what he's achieved by his actions and demanding of them, you know, declarations of love and loyalty and all the rest. But now he's thinking, I've dropped one there. So maybe.
So let's go to extremes.
And he's saying, like, crack nature's moles and singe my white head. It's not like bringing hellfire upon him.
Okay, self-destructive.
Right at the beginning of the play, and he says, I want to hand over the power.
Yeah?
Between the three daughters, because he's old inside.
It's risky, isn't it, that?
But he says he wants to crawl and burden to his death.
Right.
So he's already on it.
So you think there's a destructive path he's on in some way? Shall we read a bit more? Yeah. Would anybody like to be my fool? Right, would you be my fool?
Pardon?
Wait, you're volunteering yourself there. Would you be like to be the fool?
Yeah, it's not a laugh, is it?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, Brian, that'd be amazing.
Fool, old uncle, caught holy water in a dry house is better than this rainwater out of door. Good uncle, in, ask thy daughter's blessing. There's a knight pities neither wise man. No fool.
Rumble thy belly full, spit fire, spout rain. No rain, wind, thunder, fire are my daughters. I tax not you, you elements, with unkindness. I never gave you kingdom, called you children. You owe me no subscription. Then let fall, you horrible pleasure. Here I stand your slave, a poor, infirm, weak, and despised old man. But yet I call you servile ministers that will, with two pernicious daughters, join your high engendered battles against a head so old and white as this. Oh, this is foul.
He that has a house to put heads in has a good headpiece.
No, I will be the pattern of all patience. I will say nothing. Can we just give Brian a round of applause for his move? I like Brian through. Yeah. And you think you're the right man for the job because you're a bit of crazy in yourself, to be honest.
Came to the shared reading, were you like a keen reader or did you?
I used to be an English teacher.
Right, I see.
Yeah, and I found myself wishing so much that I'd applied this approach as an English teacher.
Gosh.
So I left English teaching to do this job, and part of me wishes, like, oh, I want to go back into an English classroom now and do this approach. The idea of just giving people ownership of their own idea, allowing them that space to just say it, and how magical that moment is when they just discover something you'd never thought before. Something that you thought you knew inside out.
Wow.
That's brilliant. Mm-hmm. So it's things like that which made me kind of love reading more since, actually. It's kind of reignited my love for literature, helped me reevaluate things I thought I knew inside out.
You enjoyed the training, the Read to Lead training?
Absolutely
then.
Did, because there were so many new things I discovered in the experience. Uh-huh. And it was really therapeutic. Really therapeutic, and I didn't expect it to be.
I think he's so hurt. And I think when you hurt as much as that, you have to let out all that hurt and upset and the expectations that you've had
because they are his children.
Right.
No, that is the crux, isn't it? The fact it's his daughters. It's not someone he works with. It's not someone. It's his own flesh and blood. So is that why it's gone to this extreme and this level?
For me, because I've not read it.
Yeah. But I mean,
I have met people who have, because I've been so hurt by a member of the family.
Yeah.
This is the way they act.
What do we think of that, everyone? Is he going to extremes? It's a really interesting point. Is he going to extremes because it's his own family that have done this to him? Are you thinking that, Dave?
Well, there's two daughters and post between them, supposed to be looking after his welfare.
Yeah. Is there an expectation there that they've not lived up to?
Like a lot of elderly people who end up with relatives or offsprings. Yeah. It doesn't work out.
Leslie, what are you thinking?
I agree that I think he's really hurt. And it's almost as if that situation where if you're really angry about something, you just want to scream.
Yeah.
Get it out of your system.
To vent and
things. And the weather is so violent, and that's how he's feeling. And he's feeling very, he can't believe he's done this to himself. And
okay. He's saying himself. Why has he done it to himself?
Because he put his daughters up again into this competitive situation, ridiculousness.
So he's to blame in a way?
Yeah, and he probably knows that. Okay. But now, what can he do? Because he's done it, and there's no going back.
And that's interesting that he uses that phrase, a poor, weak, here I stand your slave, a poor, infirm, weak and despised old man. Do you think, and you're thinking he's accepting he's done wrong?
I think that sentence probably, that's how he feels his daughters look at him. Mm. One he cast out, the other two have plotted against him. So he does feel weak because he has no power, and he does feel despised by them. Mm. And the other daughter's thrown her out.
So a lot of this is coming from hurt.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think?
It alludes to that in the first...
What you call that? Yes, stanza or whatever speech.
Frank nature's mould that makes him grateful man. Mm-hmm. So he's realising the error of his ways.
Yeah. So let's get rid of the stuff that's done this wrong.
I think it's a lot to do with emotion processing.
Yeah.
If you call that. So he's using more like the world around him as a canvas. So the reason why there's no connectedness and rationale is because it's in the land of emotion. So he's interchanging between his daughters and the weather.
That's a great way of putting
it. And it makes sense. That doesn't make sense.
Interchanging. So projecting it onto that. That's something he can... Yeah. So to come back to that thing of, you know, you said at the beginning, Jane, is this storm... Is he the storm or is it... It's kind of both, isn't it?
His storm is him. He's, as you said, projecting this, his daughters, the storm, him, all in a maelstrom of stuff going on.
Alas, sir, are you here? Things that love night love not such nights as these. Since I was man, such sheets of fire, such bursts of horrid thunder, such groans of roaring wind and rain, I never remember to have heard.
Let the great gods that keep this dreadful pudder over our heads bind out their enemies now. I am a man more sinned against than sinning.
Yeah, people saying that before. They're the victim. No, I've done nothing wrong. Always, what are we thinking there? So is he admitting he's done something wrong? Because, Leslie, you were thinking he's aware he's made this mistake.
Yeah.
And yes,
yeah.
I am a man more sinned against than sin.
He can think it, but he might want to take it on. It's all his fault.
Okay.
You know, he might have his part. I mean, when we first mentioned about breaking the mould, I thought he was quite happy that the weather was so awful, because that's how he felt.
Yeah, you can
just do your worst.
Yeah.
And, but yes, I think he knows it, but whether he wants to take full responsibility, I'm not sure.
Invictus. Anyone else need coffee?
Oh, thank you.
Anybody else?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Invictus.
Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade. And yet, the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
I admire him.
Why do you admire him?
Because he's taken whatever's thrown at him and still carrying on.
It sounds like somebody going into battle, obviously, yeah, doesn't it?
Does something
in which era of war, you know what I mean?
Where are you getting battle from? That's interesting.
I suppose this, my head is bloody but unbowed, you know, just Crimea wall, you know, just moving forward with the troops.
So with the sense of being beaten literally,
yeah,
my head is bloody, so I'm in a war.
Because they did go on, didn't they, despite knowing the hardship. I mean, the conscripts in the First World War, they just battled on all over the sun.
Does everyone else think it's war, or you're shaking your head, Leslie? Why are you thinking?
Well, I don't get that, but I see why people do. I just think it's someone coming out of, you know, the blackest of times, whatever, and fighting their way out of it.
So it's a personal battle.
Yeah, and feeling that they're conquering something to stand back up and raise their head.
Are you seeing that?
I kind of think, and maybe it's one thing, or maybe it's multiple things, but whatever is thrown at this person,
yeah,
he or she is strong enough to just battle on.
So keep going.
Got unconquerable, my head is bloody but unbowed, I'm the captain of my soul.
Yeah.
Kind of, life's not been kind to him, but he carries on strong in the less.
Does we fall underneath it?
Somebody is used. Depression.
Yeah. Mm. So the horror of the shade equal thing is more of an emotional shade, not literal.
Yeah. And in groups like mine as well, that you've got people in their 20s connecting with people in their 80s, and you'd never expect that, but there's something they've both found in it, or there's a feeling that they both understand and share. I find that really life-affirming, that no matter what your age, you could all connect over one single thing. I think it's brilliant. Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. And it's something that, because we engage with so many different groups, I found it feeding into some of our workshops as well as an approach when we're looking at a text together, that we'll discuss it a bit more and reread it and reconsider it. And it's work with all nature of groups as well, with older communities, with disabled groups that have come in that have responded to it on their level, that is, again, really been moving, really powerful experience. So I've got to be grateful, really, to the training, that it's informed not just the reading sessions, it's informed the way I deliver things more generally as a practitioner.
Yeah.
It can't help but, it's like revolutionised the way.
Wow.
That sounds dramatic, but it's really true. I think it's brilliant.
Brian, would you like to read the last verse?
Pardon?
Would you like to read the last verse for
us? The last verse.
Yeah, the last bit. pressure. Or would you like to read it, Dave?
No, Brian.
He likes it. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
Yes. Do right, Brian. You tell him. It's Hillary, isn't it? Have you come
to this group from the start? Yeah, you saying that's right?
Oh, the second. I think she'd done it last year.
Yeah.
So, but I've been this year, right?
Right. Here, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So really from the start of the year. Yeah.
Oh, I do like
so
it.
So how did you hear about it? Was it?
I always look at the leaflets and
oh, yeah.
come in, and that's how I knew about yeah. it.
What's your favourite thing about this group?
What I like about it is it's so fascinating, all the different ideas, and you can say, oh, that's right, I didn't think of that, yeah. but... And that's what I like, there's no right or wrong. I really do enjoy it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Because I
so
live on my own.
Yeah.
No, I have family in New Zealand and so forth, so I'm really on my own. So this, for me, I really look forward to it.
Come in. I'm so glad you found it. I think it best to leave the last word with Hilary there, as someone for whom the Shakespeare North Playhouse and the shared reading group there has become a place of joy, surprise and good company. Long may it continue. We send our warmest thanks to Neve, to Emily Parr and to all the members of the Shakespeare North shared reading group who attended that Friday in July 2023 and welcomed us so warmly into their group. To Anne, Brian, David, Hilary, Jane, Joanne, Leslie, Liz, Stephen, and Sue. If you want to know more about training as a volunteer reader leader or joining a group, visit thereader.org.uk or call 0151 729 2200 now. Many thanks to Chris Lynn for recording with me at the Playhouse last year, for the production and editing of this episode, and for creating the music for the Reader podcast, alongside Frank Johnson. Lastly, thanks to our core funders, Arts Council England, and the players of the People's Postcode Lottery. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Till next time, goodbye.